From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 19th day of September 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes at Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, Cargill is asking USDA to stop giving Newswire Services advanced copies of important agricultural reports. The OECD reports agricultural subsidies around the planet plummeted last year, and farmers from around Europe are protesting in Brussels. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and other ag news stories. And then I'll tell you all about National Farm Safety and Health Week and what the first responder should do. Actually, more importantly, what the first responder should not do once they show up on the scene of a farm accident. And as we close out our program today, we'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City as we wrap up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Checking the numbers as they settled in Chicago for a Wednesday afternoon. Actually closes at this point in the corn and the bean pits, but wheat futures are settled. Nearby December contract at 881.5, up 18 for the day. The March at 893.75, up 18. In July, for the harvest month in the soft red at 866.5, up 20.5. In Chicago, the December corn futures finished at 755. Up 15 cents for the day. The March at 7.59, up 15. And the May corn at 7.56.5, up 13 on the close. July futures, a close at 7.45.25, up 9.75. September of next year, $6.68, 8 cents higher. And December of corn of 2013 at $6.39.75, up 7.25 for the afternoon. November bean, $16.69.5, up 29.5. January at $16.69.25, up 30 in the March futures, 1627, up 27.25. May soybeans trading $15.58 a bushel, 22 higher. July at 1533.75, up 21.5. And next year's November's at 1366, up 20.75. Bean meal futures on the afternoon up $8.30. Bean oil 92 cents higher. Live cattle futures were up 22.5 cents. This is the Closing Market Report. The feeder cattle on the afternoon finished the October at $147. It was down 37.5 cents. And lean hogs in December at 74.72.5, up 52.5 for the day. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil at $91.89 a barrel, down $3.40. The RBOB, or wholesale gasoline price, at $2.82.2 a gallon. Natural gas trading at $2.28.3. And the difference between the two is 53.9 cents to the positive side for use of ethanol. Natural gas trading at 277.6 is up 0.3 cents, and heating oil or diesel fuel for the day is down 8.5 cents at $3.04.2. Gold futures on the afternoon up 60 cents at $1,769.30, and the U.S. dollar now at 79.05 is down 0.19 for the day. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area, as it comes from the National Weather Service for this afternoon, says we'll see sunny skies, a high of 72 degrees. It will be breezy out there on a south wind at 9 to 15 miles an hour, gusting all the way to 23. And then this evening, partly cloudy, a low of 50, south winds at 9 to 15. Thursday, mostly sunny, a high of 74 with a west wind at 5 to 7. Thursday night, partly cloudy and a low of 48 degrees. The winds will turn to the northwest and come to you at about 5 miles an hour, calming through the evening. A 50% chance of showers on Friday, partly sunny then. A high of 71 degrees, winds out of the south at that point at 6 to 11 miles an hour. Friday night, a 30% chance of showers, partly cloudy, and 46 degrees. And on Saturday, mostly sunny skies, a high of 64 degrees. Saturday night, cloudy and 41. Sunday, sunny skies and 63. A more complete look at the weather forecast comes up at the bottom of the half hour when we talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the September 19 edition of the Closing Market Report. On the phone line with us is Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Good afternoon, Todd.
This was a good day, or better day, for the marketplace if you wanted futures to go higher, certainly than Monday was. It was kind of ugly there for a while, and I suppose many were wondering just exactly what happened in that marketplace. I don't know that we've gotten, to my mind at least just yet, a really good explanation for why soybeans would drop so far so fast on that day.
Well, you know, from all the people that I've talked with within the industry, it's I guess, pretty commonly held that it was black box trading. In other words, you know, black box trading is where computers actually have been programmed with individual numbers, you know, that say if you get to this level, you actually get rid of this much of the portfolio, or if you get to this level, you buy this much more of the portfolio. And basically, it starts a tumble effect, and when you start that tumble effect, you start to see profit taking, which leads to more. And, you know, then the next day, you have large margin calls for some people. And basically that leads to some more liquidation. There's just, it's kind of just rolls along. And yesterday when we began to stabilize and it looked like they were testing and trying to find, and then overnight again testing. And when we opened the big board today, testing to try and see, you know, basically a function of what our market's all about. It's about price discovery. And when they didn't find any heavy selling or any more heavy selling, basically they decided to try and move it forward. It gave buyers more confidence. Let's just put it that way.
So we want to blame it on a flash crash, basically? They hit the limit, really?
Flash crash. Right. Well, you know, let's face it. You've got a combination of things going on. You also have the idea that we've got some harvest going on, and we actually have bean harvest going on already in many places. And so, you know, it's pretty easy at this particular time of the year. And on Monday, on top of the flash crash, now let's add all of that pent-up harvest that went on over the weekend and all the hedging that comes in against this board the minute that it opens up. You know, and all of those things, when you have that much pressure on the board, something's got to give. And in this particular environment, on Monday especially, there wasn't a whole lot of news out there to do anything else. It just basically said, okay, let's back up. And I think it wasn't, you know, and as painful as it was, not a bad thing. It probably was a good thing for anybody who wanted to try and get back in. Also a very good thing for an end user, perhaps, to be able to get in and buy at a lower price again.
I wasn't meaning to disagree with you. I was just impressed that a flash crash could be stopped that quickly at the Board of Trade, but it hit the limit, so it just did. And then got a couple of hours in the afternoon to figure out what happened, and I suppose that's the way it works. So tell me about today, then. We have a 29.5-cent gain in the nearby November.
Yeah, I think today we went back to more common sense. Basically, we saw some technical corrections here in the marketplace. And like I said, we had tested. And we also began to take a good look at, you know, what do we have for carryout? All of a sudden, where are we at on demand? And I think you're starting to see some of the focus shift already till next weekend when we have the grain stocks report coming out. And they're saying, well, you know, we probably overdid this on emotion more than anything. I believe you probably saw some farmers sell on that too. So it's just a matter of, when you have days like this, especially during harvest, and finding out that we were 25% harvested on corn didn't help anything either, you know, you have that type of emotional reaction. I can't believe, in talking with farmers, how quickly they can go from being major bulls to scared in the den bears. You know, I mean, it is really something, because that's why it's so important to have a good plan, because if you don't, your emotions will just drive you crazy, basically.
Well, I suppose many thought that they had time to harvest their beans and get them sold, and then they watched it drop 70 cents or a limit move, and it probably put them in a mindset thinking, hey, wait a second, maybe I don't have as much time to move beans as I thought I did. Right. I take it that you're more at ease with the marketplace at this point.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about it. It's always disturbing when you see something happen like that, but not at all uncommon. I think if we roll back and we look at last year, you know, we have times like this, especially when you've had strong up moves, you've held prices for a long time. You know, you look at beans realistically from a technical standpoint, and we're just down at the bottom of the uptrend channel. You know, and fortunately for corn, we managed to close above that 24% retracement. Now what we need to do is close above 783 so we can get back in the channel. But, you know, we're further harvested on corn than we are in beans. So it's everything's relative when you look at that. I thought we had some good news in the market today, too. We saw Valero start up two more of its ethanol plants that they had shut down, so they're back running full again. You know, the only on the opposite side, I don't know if you heard about it or not, but, you know, we especially, having gone to New Orleans, are a little more in touch, I guess, with the river. Mm-hmm. And Lock 27 down at St. Louis has been closed since last week. They said they've got 60 tugs and more than 400 barges backed up, the equivalent of about 2,400 rail cars or 23,600 semis of grain are sitting there waiting to go through. So I would imagine we'll see a little bit of blowback on basis because of that. But it's there's just an awful lot going on at this particular time of the year, and producers are tired already. And that makes emotion even more serious.
And you're of a mind that they still have time for both corn and the beans?
I do believe they do. You know, I think that you have to really be... We're seeing a lot of corn go to town because of concerns about aflatoxin, and I think that's something we should talk about.
Yep.
You know, if you take in a load for aflatoxin, from what I understand, and someone says to you, I happen to know about an experience like this, we'll pay you $2 less a bushel for that aflatoxin corn. You make sure that you are going to... check that out and make sure that that's fair with all the other elevators, because it has to be comparable at all elevators as to what they dock you. And I think that the number one thing I want to make sure he talked about today was, in this particular case, he called his insurance company. The insurance company said, you go to the USDA.
Mm-hmm.
USDA said there's no aflatoxin. They went back to the elevator. The elevator says, we don't accept USDAs. You have aflatoxin. Therefore, we're going to dock you $2. You know, make sure you know what you're up against. And I think what you need to do in a case like that is you really need to go back and get yourself some type of government authority to be able to help you go and bargain with these guys, because, number one, you got to keep them honest. And number two, you know, what do you do if they reject your load and now insurance won't cover it?
Right. Well, and the insurance won't. Yeah, because the insurance won't cover it, because they're saying no aflatoxin, but it's still been rejected at this point.
Right.
Interesting.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just thought that was it's an interesting debacle, because producer won't have much that they can do with it at that time.
That's right. And so, you know, it's tough. And there's some other things that are going on out in the countryside I thought everybody'd like to know about. I'm hearing in Kansas, Nebraska, you know, for high moisture corn, we've got corn that's down 25% and not even black layered. Not a good situation in terms of the starch content and everything else. And so we've got challenges at every corner. I did hear a number of different bean numbers coming in. We actually have people who are harvesting beans in Minnesota already. Can you believe it? And they're running about 20% below their normal APH. And I talked to somebody here in northern Illinois that was running 63 bushels today. So I don't know how anybody thinks that, whether it be the USDA or you or I or anybody, can get a good handle on where we're going to be until this crop's actually completely done.
Well, we'll know January, I suppose, and before then we'll get a good idea what the stocks report says, and that's not too far away.
No, it certainly isn't, and that stocks report is going to be really interesting, because, you know, the number that we see on corn is just going to be so subjective, because I don't feel very confident in how we're going to come to it. I think, you know, they came in and said 1.127 on this last one. You know, I think we could maybe see a 1.3, or we could see a 1.0. It just depends upon how that 1.1 billion bushels that was harvested before September 1st actually pencils into everything. And so I'll be glad when that report is over and done with and behind us.
Jackie, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Jackie Banks is with Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign, Illinois. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at agrigoldgiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Your Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey, is here now. He'll help us take a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, Cargill, the world's biggest agricultural trading house, has appealed to the U.S. Department of Agriculture to stop giving Newswire services advance copies of market-moving reports. Cargill officials say all users should have access to the reports at the same time. In a filing with USDA, Cargill wrote, "In which markets are actually trading, while critical reports are being released, anyone with early access will have an unfair advantage." The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development says that soaring food prices meant the world's richest countries paid the lowest support to farmers in decades last year. The share of farmers' income derived from subsidies in the 34 countries that make up the OECD fell to 19% in 2011 from 20% in 2010. Farmers and activists from all over Europe converged on European Union headquarters in Brussels to push for a food policy that is fairer to family farmers and kinder to the environment and developing nations. EU protesters charge that farming is geared too far toward big agribusiness at the exclusion of family farming. The demonstrators carried signs saying size does matter. The European Commission has made proposals to promote employment and growth in rural areas to make sure the bloc's 16.7 million farmers can continue to keep a predominant place in world farming. But the protesters gathered Wednesday want it geared more away from industrial farming and subsidies that help undercut global prices. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. A couple of things. First, shut down the combine if you're in it now, and take a little nap if you haven't already for the afternoon, because it's really good for your health and your safety. It'll make you far more aware for the rest of the day as you work these really long harvest hours. Speaking of which, it is National Farm Health and Safety Week. Farmers and ranchers, of course, should take care during the harvest season. I'll have more in a moment on one of the nation's most dangerous jobs. You're in it. And what the first person on the scene of a farm accident should not do.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Each year there are some 80,000 farm-related injuries around the nation. Most of the time, these injuries involve machinery, usually a hand, an arm, or a foot, a leg, caught up in a fast-moving tool. Well, University of Illinois Extension Farm Safety Specialist Bob Heron says it's a common accident and one where it's best to leave the victim in place and wait for the first responders.
A lot of our extremity injuries, so to the hands, arms, and legs that get caught in a piece of equipment or whatever. Normally, just from what happens, a person gets entangled in equipment, and from a first aid standpoint, if somebody comes on the scene, the mistake they often make is try to pull them out. They want to shut the equipment off, of course, if it isn't shut off, but often they should leave the victim in the machine unless there's some danger or fire or whatever, so that if and call for help for an emergency crew to come out that has training to deal with a person who's in that situation.
Once the victim is freed, Heron says they can quickly lose blood and go into shock. It's important for the first person on the scene to shut down and stabilize the equipment, call an emergency crew, and then wait for them to make a decision about how best to proceed with the extraction.
Another issue in farms this time of year is children. Now, we have a number of injuries with children because they come home from school, for example, or on weekends, and they want to be out where the excitement is, particularly boys, our research shows. And so they want to get out and they want to play, they want to be on the equipment, riding on the equipment. It all looks very exciting to them. But we need to realize that allowing children to ride on our equipment is putting them at significant risk because they can easily be thrown off the equipment because most of our equipment doesn't have any shock absorption in it, like a tractor except in the operator's seat, and wagons and so on and so forth are very little. And It's very easy for them to be thrown off the equipment and be run over by the machine before he could stop it.
Bob Aharon is always concerned about farm kids during the harvest season. He has no doubt the pressure to bring in the crop will cause moms and dads to ask too much of their offspring too soon.
They are very much at risk to accidents because one example is that they have very significant limitations. They may look like an adult and act to some degree like an adult, but they have one limitation is simultaneous motor skills. Where you have to move, if something goes wrong with a tractor, for example, it goes down in a ditch or whatever, and you've got to turn the steering wheel one direction, push in on the clutch with your foot, and maybe take an implement out of the field with a hydraulic system. You got to do that all at once to get the machine under control. And we don't develop our capacity as human beings to do that very well until we're between 13 and 15 or 16 years of age.
On the subject of kids, the younger ones will play in the gravity flow wagons. It's easy to get stuck and sucked down and suffocated as those wagons empty. Don't let that happen. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Leonard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Leonard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgro on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
This is the closing market report on a Wednesday afternoon from the Anderson's Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana. Patrick Kaufman joins us to look at the cash grain market. Thanks, Patrick, for taking the time. Busy there today?
Yes. Well, actually, at Climbers, we are not. You know, it seems like we're the busiest wherever the drying deals are at these times of year. So we had a little drying program down at Delphi today, and we taken in a couple hundred corn today, and Climbers has probably only taken 70 or 80 loads today.
Yeah, and I suppose those are all contract loads then, right?
Yes.
All right, yeah. And then at Delphi, they have a pretty decent truck line, I take it. For corn, are they taking much in the way of beans in today as well?
Beans really start more tomorrow from what we're hearing, talking to guys. And then we have rain in the forecast for Friday, so tomorrow may be a big bean day. We've got some programs going on there for the beans, kind of a load in the train. So tomorrow we anticipate big bean day. Bean receipts today have been moderate to light, 20,000 to 25,000 bushels today and 200 bushels of corn thus far. So we're open till 8, so it might be, you know, we might have a 50,000 bushel bean day.
What are your bids for the day?
Climbers, corn basis at Delphi and Climbers are both at 20 over. Our bean basis today through tomorrow, or actually today, is 5 over, and then we'll probably be dropping down to option price. Basis does feel in beans like it's going to start to relax after this weekend.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
That is Patrick. Forgot his name. That's all right. It matters not from the Andersons there in Delphi, Indiana. Actually, he's at Climbers at Logansport and joins us for the closing market report on this Wednesday afternoon. I will be back in just a couple minutes, and we'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated about the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Butterscotch Pudding Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1783, the Montgolfier brothers successfully sent up for the first time ever some live animals in a hot air balloon, including a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. In the audience, King Louis XVI of France and Queen Marie Antoinette. The flight lasted about 8 minutes and covered 2 miles. The younger brother Joseph got the idea of lighter-than-air travel when he observed laundry drying over a fire form air pockets that billowed upwards. In 1839, George Cadbury was born, an English businessman. He perfected a new cocoa bean processing technique, and the breakthrough also shepherded in federal passage of the Adulteration of Food Acts in 1872 and 1875. The acts made it an offense to sell food, drink, or drugs that were not of the nature, substance, or quality demanded by the purchaser. And in 1995, Orville Redenbacher died, an American businessman. He founded the gourmet popping industry. After testing tens of thousands of strains of popcorn, Redenbacher and his partner, Charles Bowman, finally hit on the right hybrid, Redbow. By the way, Purdue University granted Redenbacher an honorary doctorate degree in the College of Agriculture in 1988. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
This is the Closing Mark Report. It's a Wednesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. On the phone, Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, a second day. Beautiful weather, although I got to say last night it was downright chilly outside.
Well, you know, sooner or later it does. The seasons do change. We can only bake for so many weeks at a time, and it does feel fairly good out there, very refreshing. I think the humidity is relatively low, and we do have an upper level trough of low pressure that's dominating a big part of Ontario and extends down into the Great Lakes region. And there'll be two or three little disturbances that are going to rotate around this thing, and the general trough is not going to move much. So the temperatures across the heart of the Midwest will probably not change much as we go through the next 4 or 5 days. And that means some mild days and cool nights will likely prevail. We'll have a chance for a few showers. There's going to be a couple of little frontal boundaries that will come across the region and trail a few showers. I think we'll get them down as far south as central Illinois, but very, very poorly distributed so that many areas will be left dry. First little frontal boundary will be due in sometime late this evening or overnight tonight. You won't even notice it for the most part. I think it will be dry for the most part. And the next system will come in probably sometime on Friday, late morning, early afternoon. A handful of showers, probably favoring northern Illinois over the south. It'll go ahead and pass into Indiana and Ohio as well, not likely having any bigger impact than maybe a couple tenths of moisture. And that should be the end of it. Then we'll wait for a couple of days when the system will move off to the east. We'll start warming up again sometime next week.
Can you see across the country a divide between the have and the have-nots as it relates to recent moisture levels? And what concerns do you have for the have-not areas?
Well, actually, I've got a lot of concerns for the have-nots. The have-nots are mostly out there in the northern half, the two-thirds of the plains. And some of those areas are going to go a relatively long period of time without a tremendous volume of precipitation. And that concerns me because we've got already some problems with getting winter wheat planted and established. And I'm talking about places like Montana and the Dakotas, let alone portions of the hard red winter wheat area. All that region out there in the plains is running pretty darn dry, and we do need to see a significant amount of moisture evolve. And that's not in the charts for a while. Maybe sometime in the second half of next week we'll start seeing some showers occur across that region. But if you really want the long-range outlook, these areas, especially the northern half of the plains and on up into Canada, even the Pacific Northwest, will probably be drier than normal through the winter.
In Chicago on Monday, traders realized that Brazil and Argentina might be getting a few rain showers. Did they get enough to make things look better there?
Actually, the rains are still coming for the majority of Brazil's area of concern. It'd be the center south and center west crop areas where corn and soybeans are going into the ground, or soon will. I do expect to see rain develop in these areas tonight and tomorrow, and we'll see waves of energy moving through these areas on into, well, through most of next week, actually. And by the time we get to the end of the month, we should be looking at much better planting moisture across most of that region.
How about Australia's wheat crop? How's it faring?
Oh, there's a lot of trouble there. Some of the northeast and northwesternmost crop areas missed the boat. Reproduction is winding down. They didn't do very well with moisture. Now we've got a new area of dryness that's in the south central and interior southeast. doesn't look like there's going to be much rain there for the next 10 days, and those crops are approaching reproduction as well. So we're whittling away at what was once supposed to be a very large crop.
Thanks so much, Drew.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that wraps up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.